Cheering at pro wrestling shows in Japan is back, and 2023 is already shaping up to be a big year in the history of pro res. That's why you should listen to the Emerald Flow Show. From the Royal Road to the Green Mat, Paul and Gerard take you into the world of All Japan Pro Wrestling and Pro Wrestling NOAH. Not only do we analyze events, but we examine business, who is getting over, what angles are working or not. Occasionally, we take a look at other Japanese promotions like DDT and Zero One. So if you're looking for more coverage of the world of Japanese wrestling, check out the Emerald Flow Show on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network, available on all of your favorite podcast apps.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hey kids, do you like professional wrestling? Not sure I did this week, but we generally do like professional wrestling too. I am Jeff Hawkins. He is Ernest Stavo Blofeld with the cat. It's Chris Novembrino petting his cat, being evil.
Yes, my dear Hawkins.
I'll start with this because I just got a hankering for another holiday snack. And it sucks. I always decide to start dieting around the holidays for some reason, because I'm fat. Have you ever had Haystacks?
The burger place?
No. Haystacks are a snack made up of butterscotch chips, peanut butter, and chow mein noodles.
Oh, no, I have not.
I always have them around this time of year. Like there's certain things that, like, peppermint bark is really good. Ever had that from Costco? What is your go-to holiday? Are you a traditional Christmas cookie guy?
I'm an eggnog guy.
Eggnog's great.
I like eggnog.
Okay, now how do you like your eggnog? You like it with bourbon, without bourbon, with cinnamon? You know, with accoutrements?
At this point, because I'm getting increasingly lactose intolerant, it's got to have bourbon because, you know, if I'm going to go through all of that, I might as well catch a buzz along the way.
Is there another kind of nog besides eggnog?
God, I hope not.
I hope not either.
I don't actually want to try another type of nog other than eggnog.
I do like eggnog quite a bit. It just becomes a question of how much do you want to buy? Because, like, buy a little carton and it'll be fine.
You look at the calories.
Oh,
too.
God.
You're
yeah.
Like, oh, God, what am I doing?
And then you try and find other uses for it when you get tired of it, if you've bought too much. Like, I tried putting it in coffee.
Oh,
it doesn't work.
Yes, it's good in coffee.
Oh, is it? Okay. I had it once in coffee. It might have been eggnog.
It's very good in coffee.
It might have been eggnog from last year, as a matter of fact.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, once it's February, you stop drinking your nog.
Although it's basically pancake batter for the most part.
It would be good in pancakes.
It might be good in pancakes. Yeah, I like eggnog ice cream a lot.
Eggnog ice cream is good?
I do, yeah. What other uses for nog? See, I don't like a lot of
French
cinnamon.
Toast. It might be a good French toast.
Good French. Oh, there you go. You dip the bread in that stuff and then you fry it. Oh, there we go. Send your holiday recipes to Shake Them Ropes, or join the Voices of Wrestling Discord and enter the channel for Shake Them Ropes. We do this kind of junk all the time. Oh,
it's been such a healthy and robust Discord.
It has been such a midweek in terms of, I mean, we were talking about this before the show. It's like wrestling was there, and it was like a Golden Corral buffet. Here, have some more.
One of these weeks where I've popped on things to see if I've watched it because it made no lasting impression. And then I'm rewatching and I'm like, oh yeah, I did watch this. I just was bored out of my mind, so it just didn't go into long-term memory at all.
I am interested in Deadline this weekend, though. I think that'll be a decent show. I'm not going to say great show, but it has potential to it. So we'll preview that a little bit later. Top story, Kevin Sullivan, vice president of post-production for AEW, who has been there since the early days of the promotion, was let go on December 4th in a move made by Mike Mansory, the senior vice president and co-executive producer. The move was huge behind the scenes, particularly on the production side, since Sullivan had built the entire post-production team based in Nashville. This blindsided many people. The story going around was Mansory told Sullivan that morning that they were moving in another direction in 2024. Huh, that sounds sort of familiar. QT. Sullivan had no idea what was coming and was given no real explanation as to why, just that it was a Mansory decision. Sullivan's work has always been highly regarded in wrestling, and Sullivan's work has always been highly regarded in wrestling and out of wrestling. He was responsible for the video packages, things like the countdown shows and the hype shows put online to build the television shows, among other things. That's very interesting, because I mean, I believe he was also with Impact at one time. And I think he was in the latter stages of WCW towards the end. I actually kind of like their hype shows and some of the things that they do for the internet and stuff. I think they can get away from like the Vice style. Like if you've ever watched Dark Side of the Ring, that's what their hype shows kind of look like too. The one guy sitting center frame, staring at the camera, narrating something. I don't know, Chris. All this talk of new direction could be very, very good if it's something completely and totally different, or it could not be very good.
Okay. I think certainly the new direction of AEW in 2024 is going to very likely be a story of the year thing for 24, especially given 23, as now that we're getting close to the end of AEW's 2023, it's been really rocky, I think, is the final assessment. This is not a company that like was hitting their stride this year. This is a company that is trying to find its footing going into 24. Losing Punk, the end of the CM Punk era, and not really having a next lily pad to hop to from that immediately, it necessitates a new direction. Now, will this be a decisive, calculated new direction, or will it be a flailing of the limbs? That is
not just that, not just the Punk thing, but also doubling your output of live television per week, and then almost a month in, getting rid of the guy that you're building that show around.
Right. I mean, there was a new vision, and that vision involved Phil Brooks, and they abandoned ship, rightly or wrongly. And yeah, I know that there are a lot of people who are listening to this going, well, no, it's good they got rid of Phil Brooks. And, you know, especially towards the end there, I think it's hard to argue that he needed to go. But it still, at the end of the year, means that AEW had a very not successful year with their choices and their directions that they wanted to go. They wanted to have a Phil Brooks year, and for many various reasons, they were not able to have a Phil Brooks year.
I think we've all kind of had a Phil Brooks year.
You know, I'm old. I hurt.
Tired of working children. With children?
Yeah, I work with children. I actually like these children, but these are all true things.
Okay, I was talking about me, but thank you. Never mind.
Let's move on, shall we?
Sean Rossett, who I'll be seeing next week, reports that Bryan Danielson is at least partially responsible for dishing out fines based on social media conduct in recent weeks. In doing so, the goal is to help AEW look as professional as possible. There is no word on whether the fines are common or not.
I mean, I think you could file this under the new direction thing. Like the increased leadership of Danielson, or the increased emphasis on of Danielson as the voice of leadership, seems to be part of Khan's new direction plan.
Let me take a tempered position on this, because pro tightening up things, I'm all for that. Khan, not Tony. Although partially Tony, Twitter Tony, Mr. Online Tony Khan.
Remember when he said he was getting offline and he wasn't going to do it anymore?
Yeah, Mr. in his feels on the internet, Tony Khan. Now allowing Bryan Danielson to put fines when, and I think it, I don't know if work or shoot, but Mike Santana had some things to say. I think Britt Baker may have got fined for that post she made last week about not having live promo time in Pittsburgh. I don't know, man. Whenever they say people are unhappy in AEW, I view it as more of a middle child / second place syndrome, where it's like they don't hate their work. They just want it to be better. But it's crap like that that also, you know, it's like, oh, we're not like WWE making you just do, you know, random plugs for shows and always being in character. You can express yourself here. Then all of a sudden, we've hired a new vice president to come in and make sure that you aren't too online, kids. It's one of those things where it's like, I see the point, but at the same time, part of the marketing strategy was, we're not those other guys.
I mean, there's that, and then you have like sort of the time-tested trope of the boss who is holding the employees to a standard that is completely different than they themselves are holding themselves to. Like, look, you know, if Khan had issued a gag order up to and including himself, and they all just shut up on the internet for a month and a half, I mean, especially when we are talking about the dying social networking website X. Like, I mean, they could easily take a pause on X posting for everything other than the official AEW account. I don't know that you'd have a huge engagement drop at this point. You know, it seems so. I guess, like, increasingly, my point here, not just to slam on X, although, like, I mean, you know, it is X and all that, but like, as X becomes less and less relevant, right, then the harm that somebody going onto this dying social media website and saying something stupid grows, and the benefit of whatever normal content they are posting diminishes. And that's a scale that's ever tilting in favor of harm.
Mostly agree. It's just weird how AEW has used the Twitter / X platform to do so much of its marketing and so much of its, actually so much of its storytelling at times as well. And right? Now they're kind of like saying, look, you know, it's killing your parents and throwing yourself on the mercy of a court as an orphan type of a thing.
Well, no, I think there's an interesting discussion to be had there, too. Is trying to do wrestling angles on the social media networking site X in the year 2024 and beyond a dated strategy, in the same way that in the year 2014, trying to do a wrestling angle on MySpace would feel like a throwback? You know, have we maybe moved beyond Twitter as
seen on Tout?
Right. You know, like, I mean, I know you and I are not huge fans of TikTok, but I think if I was running a wrestling company or something like that, we would be doing a lot more angles on TikTok and Instagram and at least where the people are, man, you know, because they're not on X. It is very much a dated sort of throwbacky strategy. So I don't know. And I have my doubts that this is part of the 2024 AEW strategy. But if I were actually trying to revamp my strategy for a company going beyond, I'd be like, hey, guys, guess what? Next year is 2024. And that actually means we are in the middle of the 20s. We need to think about, you know, what is the rest of this decade look like? What the changing media landscape and stuff? Because it's not going to be X for the next 10 years. X ain't coming back, baby.
Sorry, I'm chuckling because I'm like 1920 to the roaring 20s. 2020 to the boring 20s.
But yeah, no, I mean, I do think that there's something to be said about just like moving beyond Twitter as the dominant marketing platform, period.
Well, this is interesting because the next two stories are all about change and how the wrestling business is changing. So for the mothership, so or not the mothership, but the number one company in the world. So I'll be interested in your thoughts on mothership, this.
Daddy.
The mothership, daddy. Go to the pay window. WWE is getting out of the home video business, according to notes from Wrestling DVD Network and House of Wrestling, HUS, our buddy Nick Houseman. WWE Home Video UK announced they will no longer be releasing shows on DVD, VHS, or Blu-ray. VHS. At the end of the year, with the final release being...
Wait, they still were?
I like, guess.
Could still get WWE VHSs?
Boy, that even took me... I was like,
dude...
Universal Records announces no more 8-tracks.
Having the COVID era on VHS is a total vibe.
Oh yeah. At the end of the year, with the final release being Crown Jewel on December 18th in the UK and December 22nd in Germany. But in the US, the WWE home video department is set to close up at the end of this year. House of Wrestling got a WWE quote stating that, quote, the home video business has long been in decline and will no longer be a place where the company dedicates time and resources. I have become a person who is really, really pro. Go out and buy as much of the physical media that you want to own as possible, because standards and practices, as we evolve as a streaming nation, they're going to start censoring more and more stuff out of them. So if you want the originals, you know, I'm not going to tell you to go out and torrent over at Wrestling Classics, but maybe you should. I don't know. It's one of those things where it's like, I actually like physical media. Now, I haven't bought as much of it over the years as streaming has become more and more prevalent. I understand that, and that makes me part of the problem. I feel the same way as when Toys R Us started closing up their brick and mortar stores. You know, you're kind of like, wow, where are we going to go for toys from now on? Even though Amazon's the obvious answer type of thing. I find it sad in some ways.
Yeah, I guess time has sort of progressed a little bit. I now see delineation points between downloading versus streaming. And I have like a much more negative view of like streaming a piece of content versus downloading it and like owning it. You know, you have the actual physical, you have the data, you know, like it is on your hard drive. It cannot be altered. It is actually physical to a certain extent. I think there's really something to be said for that. Versus streaming access, just because, I mean, if anything, we've seen streaming access can be taken away, and you know,
or it's there and you can't find it. Like, you remember WWE Network deciding, you know, at random times you won't be able to find anything for Hulk Hogan, you won't be able to find anything for Chris Benoit, you know, those because the history is too negative on those people.
Well, I mean, there's like that, and you know what else too? It's like trusting these platforms to curate content
yes.
in coherent ways is really, you know, that's a crapshoot. If man,
half of 70s and 80s wrestling is like this either homophobic or racist, and you're just like,
well, there's that too, right? Yeah, like yeah, I mean, so the WWE Network, especially at the launch, was such a disjointed mess.
God, yes.
Yeah, it was so, I mean, you couldn't watch anything in sequential order. It was just a bunch of random, like, freaking wrestling episodes.
And then they got it to be good, and they started making special collections and things like that. It's like, oh, this is great. And then they gave it to Peacock, who then re-screwed it all up.
Yeah.
When we wanted that job?
Dude, like
still kind of want that job, to be honest with you, since nobody is doing this crap.
I mean, what is the point of, yeah, I guess it's like, what is the point of owning all this content if you guys aren't going to archive it like in a somewhat coherent and digestible and enjoyable way? Like
it's
like,
IP. It's yeah, oh, we own it, and we're just going to dump it.
Yeah, I know. It's, but it's like, I don't know. We could make, you know, fun 89, 90, 91, like recappy sort of things, and like, you know, get people into these things. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. It's sad. Speaking of which, house shows may be going the way of the dodo. TKO president Mark Shapiro brought up WWE house shows and said, while there's a reason to have them because it's good for the brand, we're building audience, we're putting them on in C&D counties. So we're really stretching the brand and we're amassing a greater array of eyeballs from all demos, so it's good for our long-term growth. Through a margin perspective, they are dilutive, so there's probably an opportunity as well. Go through our efficiencies and our synergy opportunities. God, that's such corporate speak.
I love the human way that corporations teach you to speak.
To cut back on some of those non-televised events, which will push our margin up, so we are going through that exercise now. Also, as part of that, might be seeing a lot more advertising on WWE rings, etc. Shapiro continuing, WWE was, as my CFO likes to put it, it was religion for Vince. He just didn't want to commercialize the venue for the most part. The mat was clean, the ropes were clean, just there wasn't a lot of signage or activation because its advertisers don't just want to put their banner up there anymore. They want activation. Another buzzword. We my specialize God. In that at UFC, and we're going to bring some that same strategy to the WWE, and there are no rules.
Ugh. I mean, look, this is one of these things that I think Vince actually was right on, that putting advertisements on the ring is at once gaudy. That is true. It does do something for the presentation to have a clean ring. But beyond that, the advertisement is like there forever. So 30 years later, you're watching a wrestling pay-per-view for Little Caesar's Pizza advertisement from like 30 years ago. It just makes...
Oh, take me there. That was buy one, get one.
Hey, you know what? Domino's currently has an amazing emergency pizza offer.
Pizza, pizza, baby. No, I get... Man, that'd be interesting in terms of... I don't think residuals would have to... play, but I
right, but I mean, like,
but I think the whole thing being clean and it's not so in your face and it's not just add here, add there, so busy all the time actually helps their product in so many ways, since so much of it is shilling advertisement to begin with, and then to get away from that and be able to watch the match, even though a lot of the commentary is also just cynical shilling for either, you know, slogans of wrestlers or products or whatever. Turning the ring into like a NASCAR track.
Vince is right about this. They're gonna make a mistake. They're thinking, oh, it's gonna be like UFC or boxing, but it's not UFC or boxing.
Will sponsors be able to sponsor individual wrestlers? Like, we had that with Jimmy Johns and Brock, but like, can we get like Blue Chew and The Miz versus, you know, here's Santos Escobar representing Ozempic or something like that. Pfizer comes in, starts buying a bunch of wrestlers.
Chad Gable and Otis out there for Twix.
For Twix. I'm thinking of all the inappropriate ones. Well,
they want activation is what they want. And I like, that's the other thing I struggle with. It's like they say they want activation. I'm just like, dude, I don't want to watch TV shows that are just advertisements.
Yes.
It's nothing to watch TV shows with advertisements in the commercial breaks. No interest in watching a television show with Trojan horse advertisements all throughout it. Because there is content without that crap that doesn't insult my intelligence.
It just makes you mad because it's like you have no interest in building a good television product here. You're just interested in how much advertising you can throw in there and how many, you know, how.
Well, and this is clear. It's clear this is where advertisers want their foothold to go now in this decade and beyond because of the streaming thing and the fact that you can like fast forward through stuff.
Yeah.
So, the commercial break is this sort of dying thing. So now they just want to be on the television show. And I don't want that. I have no interest in watching that. I understand that like art needs to be supported by commerce and all of that. But like this division for me on a philosophical level has no merit whatsoever. It's basically an art fomercial. And yeah. I have no interest in watching an art fomercial. I'm like not going to be, you know, doped into that.
Like there's good ways to advertise on sports. Like I don't mind like a clock and scoreboard sponsored by an advertiser up there on the screen while the play is going, et cetera, et cetera.
And WWE's always done soccer. That. Yeah, like WWE's been willing to do that. This
feels like, and he throws him into the turnbuckle sponsored by Tampax. Tampax for all your period needs. You know, all that kind of stuff. And you're just like, oh my God, it's going to be forced ad read. Throws him into the ropes. These ropes sponsored by Killers of the Flower Moon.
Man, there's a lot of blood. You know, it'd be great to wipe that up. Some Bounty paper towels sponsoring our left turnbuckle this week.
Yeah, all four turnbuckles have different sponsors, and you have to do the ad read every time one goes into one.
They do a four stanchion spot so that you can get each advertisement. Oh,
four corners. You know the four corners match where you just have to hit every corner and then would go back to one if you didn't hit all four?
Otis has Miz's head and he's bashing him against the Bounty paper towel one. Now they're going over the Purina turnbuckle. One, two, three. Purina's a great place to be as they're...
And now the bottom turnbuckle, Slim Jim. Snap into a Slim Jim, available at Grocers Worldwide.
And, of course, our last turnbuckle, sponsored by Clorox. Oh, Otis is bashing his head against that, too. Clorox really cleans up the messes. Miz is kind of a mess right now.
Andrade expected to be returning to CMLL for the first time since 2015 to do a show. His contract is set to expire with AEW in the summer, and there are rumors that if time is not added on, he is looking to go back to WWE, and if that were to happen, he wouldn't be able to work CMLL again, so he's trying to get in while the getting's good. Andrade's one of those interesting ones, because I never know if he wants to go back or not, because he's such a malcontent everywhere, pretty much. I know his wife is in WWE. His on again, off again wife is in WWE. But, yeah. Any thoughts on that? Should I just move on?
Yeah, move on.
Okay. Sports Illustrated report that Kazuchika Okada was going to entertain outside offers, which he has never done previously, when his contract is up on January 31st. We noted that the WWE is looking at making a deal with Okada, although that's been the case for years, but the idea that was previously Okada was never interested in leaving, and now he might be. The idea is that he can earn more in the U.S., but it is also to be noted that Okada's wife is a well-known actress based in Japan, so that plays an aspect on whether or not he would leave. Do you think WWE has a chance? Because I do on this one. I think AEW is overspent for a lot of guys and not done a whole lot with New Japan guys. And I think he's what, 30? He's in his 30s. And I think there's always that I want to play Carnegie just once type of thing for a lot of guys. They want to see what the pinnacle is and see if the grass is really greener. If I were a betting man, look, I don't know anything into his mindset. And I know that, you know, I know he likes being in New Japan. I know he likes occasionally working in the States. I would not be the least bit surprised if Okada re-signed with WWE.
I just would hope that he'd talk to his pal Shinsuke and get a lot of guidance. As
you can surf here every day, dude. That was what he would Nakamura would tell him.
Yeah, I mean that for sure. But you know, getting some guidance on how to negotiate the
all these website geeks are gonna say that you're no longer gonna be having great matches, but it doesn't matter because you're gonna be making so much more money.
Well, yeah, and I mean, Nakamura will encourage him to phone it in hard.
Oh, yeah. Nakamura is in pure. I'm showing up for this check.
Dude. Have you considered doing less?
He truly is the Jerry Lawler of this day and age, isn't he?
Yeah, oh, yeah. No, he just...
You love him, but he ain't doing much, and it's great.
No, I know. I right, like he gets... He is like the Japanese Christian at this point, where he has these slow, like plodding matches, and they're methodical and they're entertaining. It's very clear. Well, Christian actually puts in effort, but like it's very clear Nakamura knows you can do less. It's fine if you do less.
It's all fake.
Yep.
The reason the yeet stuff by Jey Uso hasn't been used in a while is that there's a trademark issue. Independent wrestler in June 2021 trademarked the term yeet. And even though it's lapsed, WWE and their attorneys have decided to put the kibosh on it until they can sell things out. That would be hilarious to me if he can no longer use it because they just don't want to fight a lapsed trademark. Oh my God, imagine that.
The yeet thing will still stay around with the crowds. And
the crowd will do it.
They won't be able to monetize it. But I mean, that's what it is. Like, Sami Zayn hasn't really been able to monetize the ole, ole, ole thing in years. No. So,
speaking of which, Sami Zayn had some time off approved. It was rumored that's why they did the angle on Raw with Drew McIntyre at the end of that show with his ankle and stuff. Good for him. He's been working like a dog the past couple of years. So, but they have a show in Montreal over the holidays, and it appears he may not be there. But that could change. He could do a special one-off for it. But I hope he gets some time to heal up there. That's gonna do it for the news. Lazy River time, Chris.
Oh, I feel like we've been putting it off by dragging out the news segment.
Well, we can put it off a little bit more because we have a preview this week. This week we have a pay-per-view or premium live event, as they call it. NXT Deadline tomorrow, Saturday. No college football other than Army Navy. So you'll have plenty of time to watch if you'd like. Seven matches announced. Of course, they changed the North American Championship match because Wes Lee having some back issues, so he's going to take some time off. But in the pre-show, Axiom versus Nathan Frazier in a singles match. This is going to be a sprint, and Nathan Frazier is going to win. And it's going to be a fun match because Nathan Frazier and Axiom are both awesome.
Nathan Frazier is going to win, but I think this is going to be like the start of a Nathan Frazier heel turn. I think, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I think the whole, like, the let's just have a nice match as friends thing is the setup for Nathan Frazier, like, having...
You think they turn him over Axiom?
Oh. Well, then, in that case, I think Axiom wins.
Because Axiom, isn't a mask, so you can just keep beating him and beating him until you decide to turn him into a kid or whatever name you're going to give him again.
Well... I could see Frazier losing to a heel Axiom here and being on a losing streak after the Ilya Dragunov thing, going through a character reset that way. I could see Frazier using the Ilya Dragunov beatdown as an inflection point to go crazy on Axiom. But I think this does result in Frazier winning. I feel like this results in Frazier turning heel. I almost feel more confident in that than the outcome. So I'm going to say Frazier. I'm going to say Frazier wins.
I'm going to say Frazier wins as well. Carmelo Hayes taking on Lexus King, a.k.a. Brian Pillman Jr.
It's weird how we've gotten to this match.
Yes.
It has such strange heat. Like, I guess there's some, it's like a TV match because it's more of a skit than a match, because there's no intensity or real premise for Alexis King and Carmella Hayes fighting other than Trick Williams' fifis are hurt. And I'm going to say Alexis King finds a way to beat Carmelo Hayes because they're moving Melo up the roster. It seems stupid to have Melo beat Alexis King.
I think it'll have to do with something to do with Hayes and Williams in the Iron Survivor. That's all I can think of. And that Alexis King somehow steals a win from Hayes, but maybe Trick Williams has come out to help him and ends up distracting Carmelo Hayes or something to that effect. Because I think that split's happening on this show somehow.
Yeah, I think so too.
In a match that interests me only insofar as if they overthink it, it's going to not be very good, but it could be very, very good if they don't overthink it. Roxanne Perez taking on Kiana James. Now, I have said this before, Kiana James is a gamer, but when you watch her wrestle, there are times where you can see the wheels turning, where she's thinking about what she needs to do, et cetera, et cetera. And I think a steel cage match is one of those things where it's like, if this were just a straight match walk and brawl, she'd be better off. She is possibly my most improved wrestler of the year. She has been fantastic in things. I mean, look, she's not Becky Lynch or Bayley, but she has improved. She's gotten in on the game. She's a good base for smaller wrestlers like Roxanne Perez. Roxanne's going to be coming off the ropes or off the cage on top of Kiana James and be just fine because Kiana James can do that for her. They've gotten into that phase with Roxanne now where she's far too straight ahead of a babyface. We need to give her some edge. And she's been acting like a jerk. I don't know if they're going to turn her heel. I hope not. But if you recall, they did a QR code thing on the show. And during that show, that QR code was the voice of Cora Jade saying, "See you at NXT Deadline." I think she may get involved in this match somehow. Would I be crazy to think Kiana James might win this?
I think Kiana James does win this. I think like Roxanne's on a storyline and Kiana James needs like a build.
Yes.
Yeah, so I actually do think Kiana James wins this.
Okay, so we're agreeing on that one. Dirty Dominic Mysterio with Rhea Ripley versus Rhea. versus Dragon Lee with Rey Mysterio.
I think it's really cool that Wes Lee got his cousin from south of the border to come in and fill in.
Dragon Lee is currently on the main roster. Dom Mysterio is currently on the main roster.
Why is this happening?
Exactly. It'll be fun.
Dom's going to retain, but like it's stupid to not even have someone from NXT have a match with Dom. Like, how little faith do you have in this guy that you can't like?
They're even putting an NXT guy in the US title tournament on SmackDown. I don't know who it is. I mean,
you could have Dom have a jobber match on a pay-per-view, and like if you presented that the right way, it would make total sense, where he like acts like this is a pay-per-view title defense and it's just like an enhancement talent match against, you know, like Marcus Bigsby or, you know, whatever, like generic guy you have. Like, here he is.
Marcus Bigsby. You've used that name before. And
I have not. No, that's a new one. That's a new one.
I actually think there's a chance Dragon Lee may take this title because before we went to air, I was watching some of SmackDown and they're doing a US title tournament and they just had Dragon Lee lose to Santos Escobar. I can't believe that they're just going to keep burying Dragon Lee like this. He's going to have to get a win somewhere. And with Ray in the building, I think this is a title change.
I don't. I think that the Judgment Day is all premised around them having the mid-card belts and stuff. And like,
okay,
belt off of Dom just like makes them have to start writing a whole storyline for Dom not having a belt that they don't want to hassle with right now.
Women's Iron Survivor Challenge. And the things that are fascinating to me, I said this last week for the Iron Survivor matches, is a lot of new faces. And that could be a recipe for disaster, but we will see. Tiffany Stratton versus Lash Legend versus Blair Davenport versus Kehlani Jordan versus Fallon Henley. Lash Legend got her championship. She got to body slam Otis on NXT television. That's kind of a big deal. I have thoughts as who might win. Who do you have on this?
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card, but with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy Slab Packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club Slab Pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show, and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, and sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs, and it ends up being, you know, almost nothing, you know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You get a display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading. So you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, setting these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet, arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally, and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy video lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived. And really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys and reach in my pocket, or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy video lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition. 1 second, door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
I'm gonna say Kehlani Jordan just because, like, I feel like they've been wanting to push her, and like this is gonna be used as a jump starty platform
just for a one shot at the title.
Yeah, I mean, because like Stratton's the strongest of all of them, but
you can name her number one contender at any time.
Any time, right. And then, like, so then I'm, like, pulling her out. I'm going Fallon Henley now. Who's the other one?
Lash Legend. And Blair Davenport.
Maybe Blair. See, maybe they have Blair win it so that they can have her go up in a match against Lyra Valkyria. I could see that.
I swear they've had that match 30 times already.
I swear. I know. We definitely saw it in NXT UK, and it stinks.
Hope it's not Blair Denver. There's an inkling of me that thinks they give this to Lash Legend for the one-shot title thing just to see what they have with her. I mean, look, you can't go wrong with Tiffany Stratton. Tiffany Stratton would be great as the number one contender. She'll bury whoever. She'll say toodles. She'll say Tiffy time. Lash Legend is an intriguing pick to me. As is, actually, you know what? As is Fallon Henley. Because Fallon Henley, she could work a match. I mean, she won't win the title. I mean, it just depends on if you're building this for somebody to take the title off of Lyra, which you're not going to, but boy, all that spooky crap in the promo with her, with who is that that's hanging behind the scenes? It's Fallon's old tag team partner. What's her name?
Oh God, what is her name? Because they made her all like evil and crap.
Yeah, I've already forgotten her name. Kehlani's not the worst choice. I'm gonna go out on a limb and say Lash Legend wins this. And I'm not certain it's going to be a very good match, but we'll see.
No, I have my doubts about the match quality.
The men's side for the number one contender for the NXT Championship. Dijak versus Trick Williams. Hoss fight. Versus Josh Briggs. Hoss fight. Versus Bron Breakker. Hoss fight. Versus Tyler Bate. Not Hoss fight. Although, small Hoss.
Small
Hoss. Any Hoss. Hoss Jr. He can do
this.
Little Hoss
this actually, this is the opposite of the women's match in that I think it. You know, you like at first blush look at these names and go, this doesn't look like a kadoozy of a match. But I think these guys are going to come in and beat the crap out of each other.
Oh, yeah. I hope so. That's all I want in a match.
I think this is going to be a bar burner. I think this is going to make going through the women's match worthwhile. Maybe the women's match over delivers. One or two things happens. Either the women set the bar really high and the men then try to clear that bar, or the women match underperforms and the men feel kind of compelled to go out there and really bring it home. In either case, I think it's going to be a meat fest. It's going to be fun.
Who do you have winning?
I think Trick wins. Yes, Trick and Mello are going to split, but I think the Trick Mello split might be the television angle coming out of this pay-per-view. I think Mello wins, Trick wins, and like they end the night seemingly standing tall together,
but giving each other side eye.
Yeah, and it's beginning. Yeah. Exactly. They both win, right? Like they should be together. You know what I mean? Like it should be Trick Mello game back on top, but it's not.
Yeah, it's an uneasy relationship has healed for right now as we go dark.
Yeah.
Boy, Trick Williams is the strong pick here. But there's that part of me that thinks Bron Breakker gets this just to get back on top. But I can't get
too early to go back. It's too early to go back to the Dragunov match. You got to remember whoever wins this is going to Dragunov.
Yeah, I can't get that far into it. I'm going to say Trick. And I'm going to say Josh Briggs is going to do something amazeballs. And hopefully he doesn't get hurt. It's going to be one of those types of moves. Where he's going to, somebody's going to be in his ear about him having him prove himself, so to speak. And so he's going to do it like, you remember during the, that one tag team elimination chamber when Tucker was just going off and doing like amazing things in the elimination chamber.
Really good, that. Yeah. I mean, you know, I don't think it's going to be him, but Dijak versus Dragunov is always a match that has high quality, you know, attached to
it. Versus Dragunov would be a barn burner.
Yeah.
I mean, but Bates being rumored to being moved up, as preposterous as that sounds. Yeah. I mean, I think this is going to be match of the night. Obviously, to me,
it'll be great. They'll bring Bait in, and he can be friends with his buddy Butch.
Butch,
yeah, it can be like Butch.
They should call him Bait. They shouldn't even call him Tyler. No. Bait and Butch.
No, his name should be Squire.
Squire.
Butch and Squire.
No. He needs one of those. I had a name. I couldn't think of it. Like one of these British names that's effeminate or something like that, but it's a man's name. Ashley. They call him Ashley, and he goes up there and he's just an ass beater or something like that. Yeah. And then for your final match, the NXT Championship, Ilya Dragunov versus Baron Corbin. Baron Corbin is fantastic at the build. And I think he's going to be awesome selling for Ilya. But remember, he's going to have to get the heat at some point. And that's going to be unbearable to watch and in some ways. I got Ilya retaining here.
No way.
Thank you, Captain Obvious. That was great of you. Yes.
Damn.
I do my service, yes.
That's why the people tuned in.
I don't know, Chris. I'm looking at the numbers here. I think Ilya has a chance. Threw me off so bad on that one. It's like I was actually just trying to play it straight. No, I think Ilya has this one. Oh, really? Mind if I jump down your throat here, you jerk?
I wasn't even trying to jump down. It was just like, you don't think Baron Corbin's going to win it? No way.
Although, you have to admit, there is something there, given that this is the end of the year, and they're going to have a show for Rumble, and they're going to have a show probably on WrestleMania weekend where you could give Baron Corbin an NXT title run, because did he ever hold the NXT title? I don't think he did.
No, he didn't.
Well, Becky Lynch
and
got
that
a
was
chance.
His whole point. If you had watched his wonderful inspired promo,
I watched this and it was good. Okay,
Then how come in one ear and out your mother?
Because every other wrestling thing this week has gone in one ear and out the other. Chris, I told you that before.
Yeah. So no, I have this match not being particularly good. I mean, yes, obviously Dragunov retains, but I think this is gonna stink. Like, you know, yeah, Corbin's gonna get his heat spot. He'll do a couple of moves. You're like, but this is gonna be super by the numbers. The outcome's never gonna be in
doubt. The melodrama is gonna be so high.
His heat spot's never gonna have you legitimately think he's got Dragunov beat. I think honestly. The much better move here is Dragunov comes out and he annihilates Baron Corbin in his title
defense. And then he points to Trick Williams and says, "You're next."
Yes, exactly.
Yes, because they're about the same size.
The move here would be to have this be one of the most dominant title defenses.
Oh, even better. He beats the living crap to the point where Vic and Booker are getting vaguely disturbed How much of a beatdown that Ilya is getting
by ref stoppage.
Yes.
Yeah, like Corbin loses by ref stoppage.
And everybody's just like, what the hell did we just see out of Ilya Dragunov?
I would have that be the in-between match between the women and the men's match. Have it be about 7 minutes. And have Corbin, like, it looks like Corbin's going to get a heat spot early, and then Dragunov turns it around and just annihilates him for 5 minutes until the match has to be stopped, and then we go to our main event. And it's like, who wants to go up against that?
Yeah, oh, that'd be so great.
Oh,
that'd be so awesome, where it's who wants to go up against that maniac? And everybody's just kind of like going, well, it's a title shot.
right. Yeah, that'd be great. Even Breaker has a little bit of he's cocky, but he's also now like questioning himself, like, huh, this is not going to be so easy the second time around.
Yeah, like Braun's back there warming up, and Ilya comes back with blood all over his fists, licking them or something. And Braun's like,
that would actually be such a great post match where he walks back past all five guys.
Yeah, and holding the belt. Who wants some of this?
Holding the belt, he just stares at all of them, having just completely annihilated Corbin, sending him packing forever.
Even Dijak. Dijak has his glasses on. He's like,
yeah.
He should be the button. He should just say, like, drop an F bomb and it gets bleeped out. Okay, so we have anything else in wrestling we can talk about? I'll let you start, because I'll tell you one thing. My topic's gonna be boring as hell. What did you see this week, Chris?
Boy, I mean, I watched NXT, but we basically already kind of covered that.
We covered that.
And then, you know, WWE was there.
Yeah.
It was very much a show that was there. I continue to think that the Judgment Day is a very solid narrative structure for them to have been running this show through here. Like, they're good. Damian Priest continues to be a really great screen presence. Like,
with
Priest,
one exception.
In what way?
I can't stand R-Truth being...
I know, I hate...
They
okay,
need to beat the crap out of that dude.
Right, no, it's stupid. Like I don't like the R-Truth stuff, and it's
don't
weird.
Don't cool down the heat of the Judgment Day by putting in this what-up-up-up-up without them absolutely annihilating that guy.
I think the first week, I liked it the first week where Damian Priest was just like, no, he's not worth our time. We are like we're such dominant heels that we don't need to beat the crap out of just every single baby face. I liked that the first week. Having this being a running gag, I am with you, is stupid and undermining. So it was fine. It was fine week one. It's not so good now.
Yeah, it can't continue.
Yeah, no, it has
to. You gotta take the wackety smackety.
Literally has to end next week. Especially after Dominic and JD McDonagh lost the match or whatever. They kind of need to get their heat back by just beating the crap out of R-Truth.
Our boy BOC is screaming, it's Jimmy Valiant and the Horsemen. The Horsemen would never allow that crap to happen on their time. They'd stomp a mud hole in them in the locker room. Yeah, I agree. Anything on? Well, I'll tell you what I told you what I watched before. I watched a 1992 WCW Power Hour, and man, they had a sneaky. I mean, look, everybody knows that War Games in February was fantastic, but this is the build, the Halloween Havoc. I was watching, and they haven't done the Japanese Super Show yet, where Rude and Chono fight. I think Rude injures his back in that show. But they entered Jake Roberts has just come in. They've explained he came in. He cuts a promo. They show his promo from Live in the Ring. They also show the Clash of the Champions part of that match. They had a ridiculously booked, I don't know if you remember this, they had Sting taking on Jake Roberts, Vader, and Rick Rude in one match, because that's just what Roberts wanted in order to get to spin the wheel, make the deal. And they set up the feud that we never got between Vader and Rude in that match, because Sting gives him like a suplex and Vader's on the top rope and he just decides to splash both of them for good measure. And I never realized that's how they set up the entire Rude Vader feud there. I was like, okay, that's kind of cool. Other interesting things of note, I had a Jimmy Garvin versus Scotty Flamingo. And it was just about as good as you'd expect it to be, even though I like both guys. Rick Rude versus Van Hammer. Two squash matches with Vader and the Barbarian, because the Barbarian was about to get a world title shot against Ron Simmons, so Cactus Jack cut a promo for him. And also we got a, don't forget to watch WCW main event, where we'll see Bobby Eaton and Arn Anderson managed by Michael Hayes. I had forgotten about that Michael Hayes managing that team, because I remember the whole basis of that was a promo about the three greatest tag teams of the 80s. Each had one player, and then Michael Hayes never wrestled in that entire group. It was just Anderson and Eaton who didn't need them. Yeah, no, it was a fun little thing. A lot of recaps, a lot of video, and a couple of squash matches. It's all I need for my wrestling. Should we do Dynamite now?
Yeah, I mean, I guess we ought to, but boy, this was just a ho-hum, this show's just your sort of show, especially when it comes to the in-ring action. I mean, the highlight of the show, I guess in terms of pacing, was the main event, which is always good, but I didn't think the main event was very good. So, and you know, lots of skit. You didn't think Copeland was going to win the title here. I think turning Nick Wayne's mom and having Nick Wayne's mom as an on-screen character,
I thought they did the most easy way possible instead of actually giving a little thought to it, where it's like she should have attacked. She should have attacked Christian first for that whole thing with the kill switch / Luchasaurus thing where he hit her, and then eventually turned and attacked Edge attacked Adam Copeland for hurting her son. And then eventually taking the belt, handing it to Christian, and then letting him finish him. I mean, that to me is the best way to do this, where you know she's going to turn, but at least make it seem realistic there, because she should be mad at Christian as well.
Right.
I mean,
she also just did a terrible job for her part, too,
yes,
in that skit. Like the eyes were not... I mean, she was already looking at Copeland, so it was never in doubt for a second that she was going to hit him.
This was the week where we hit the weakness of this tournament, to me. Because in a G1, you have two groups of 16. It's drawn out. You have various matches. You can build out, you know, wins, losses, et cetera, et cetera. And this one, where you only have six people in each, you have to get the wins in there early. People build leads. And to me, both the gold and blue suffer from the same problem, in that you have two main eventers, two mid-carders, and two guys who are obviously going to get beat in both. And you know who's who. And you might get one mid-card upset in there in terms of either, you know, Brody and Claudio, or and then in the gold side, it's Jay White and Roosh. But I mean, you know, Jay Lethal and Mark Briscoe are there to get beat, and you know that Eddie Kingston and Daniel Garcia are pretty much there to get beat.
Which is hilarious, considering Eddie Kingston put
his belts. Yeah.
I had my doubts about this tournament's ability to be booked in a cogent way for this length of time. Long form booking has not been a strong point of AEW during the year 2023, and this tournament has been no exception to that.
Well, there's no sense of urgency in these matches. I mean, they're 20-minute time limits, allegedly, or whatever, and it's like there's no real heat to them. They're good matches. Don't get me wrong. They're good matches, but they're good
matches. That's another
mistake,
too. I think that these matches should have had 10-minute time limits, so that they are sort of forced to be more of a sprint, which creates the optics of more of a sprint. However, also gives the guys, you know, more time, like actually gives them, like, more breaks and stuff, but allow kind of... It maximizes in minimum, So I think that the mistake here too is, yes, there should be time limit draws. Yes, there should be more of a race against the clock. Yes, there should be a faster pace to these matches. The one thing that they sort of started doing this week that I think they should have been doing more of is everyone should be racking up injuries too as this tournament elapses. So yeah. The two guys in the final, like basically the final of the story of the tournament, should be two injuries against each other and who's going to. No, I'm for real. Like a hand injury versus a leg injury or something.
I was just imagining two guys in body casts trying to fight each other.
Yeah, no. Two guys and one guy like one guy in a motorized scooter and another guy like in like full leg casts.
Yes, yes. The other major story on Dynamite was, of course, we did not get the MJF and Samoa Joe versus the Devil's Minions bait and switch in a way, but we did get the reading of the red herrings because we had Roddy ditching his wheelchair this thing made me angry. Because it was so poorly executed to me, because it's obvious, number one, they fell away from the bit. The entire bit should just be that Roddy screams the word Adam. That's the only word, unless he's going to do random words here and there that he just screams out for
no reason.
That's not
the bit. The bit is that, like, he's Adam Cole's annoying friend.
Yeah, so he should scream Adam and then goes quiet, and that's the bit. Right?
Yeah.
Instead, he's screaming Samoa Joe, as you know, it's like, and then eventually it's like, I'm ditching the wheelchair to let you all know that I'm no longer responsible for my actions or whatever. And it was just like, that was supposed to be an ooh and ah moment and just didn't hit with the bad comedy. Although Matt Taven's giraffe sweater, MVP of that segment.
It's been months of bad comedy.
Yes.
In some cases, replaying the bad comedy skit twice on the television. Having that ironically being the funniest comedy that ever came out of
this
comedy over several months here. I have no intrigue for Roderick Strong's next match. Nothing they have done in the intervening several weeks here, 3 months, right? Like 12 weeks has made me remotely interested in seeing any of these three guys wrestle.
And then we got the Hangman and MJF promo, which for my taste was a little bit too passive aggressive. You know?
Yeah.
It's one of those, you know, two guys who don't want to fight each other. Just kind of, and then you blew your title shot. And then you blew your title shot. Then you did this. It's like, they're not really getting mad at each other. Although I did like, Adam Page leaves and then MJF says something different. I go, oh, what was that? And I was like, okay, that's perfect. That works in there. But he was obviously there to set up the red herring with the broken bottle. Although the more I watch this, I'm wondering if they've changed the Devil yet again, because part of me thinks that everybody is looking at MJF and telling him that they know the truth here, that it's MJF, and that it's going to turn out to be MJF. it has to be Adam Cole, right? That's the only guy it could be that would actually make this thing work, because Tony Khan couldn't make it work. I don't think Jungle Boy makes it work. I don't think Britt Baker makes it work. It has to be Adam Cole, right? Or MJF, or both. Who knows?
I don't get it, because then, like, it's like, how does Wardlow fit in? I guess it has to be Adam Cole. Adam Cole would be the only one who makes sense. However, I mean, look, if it was the Bucks and Page, and then you had the other two henchmen are like Cutler and Wardlow. That's something.
That's something. Yeah, but, it was just, you know, I like, it's one of those things where it's like, okay, you're being hunted by an unknown force with a bunch of goons. This was MJF doing a heel promo instead of a babyface promo too, to Adam Page, which I thought it doesn't click with this new character development we've gotten out of MJF type of a thing.
really I thought that was maybe my bigger issue with the characterization, is that MJF is supposed to be a paranoid babyface right now. Like, you know, he is overreacting and he's paranoid. In this here he felt confident, which he shouldn't be, And yeah, he felt needlessly contentious, which also he shouldn't be.
Yeah, especially towards Hangman, who hasn't been involved in this at all at any point. It was just like so weird that he's coming out, but just it, I mean, and then of course you get the broken bottle, and it's like, well, of course it can't be MJF anymore and Hangman, but yeah, I mean, and you know, the Tony Storm thing. Okay, Riho's back.
Oh,
great,
dude. Boy, was Riho's return. I mean, her theme song stinks. It does this thing.
Her costuming stinks is what really stinks.
Like, I just, there's a lot of things about Riho I don't care for, but there's this like thing in her theme song where it like crescendos to this high note that's like a strange high note for it to crescendo to, and it really just sort of hits home.
It's totally 8-bit video game music.
It's also a whole tone scale if you want to get into it.
I didn't know we were gonna do music theory today.
I wasn't even trying to go there. I wasn't even trying to go there on that. But she's as awkward as a whole tone scale is how I feel.
Yeah, and her whole like, I just want women wrestlers to be presented as athletes, as opposed to, it gets into my Joshi issues where they're children sometimes, and you're like, and Rio is always presented to me a little bit childlike, and I just go, she's a good wrestler, don't get me wrong. This match is going to be Tony Storm sports entertainer with Luther versus Rio. It's not going to be the stardom match. Everybody's thinking this is going to be the stardom match, and it's not. It's going to be movie star Tony doing, you know, windmill punches like she was doing on this show. And you're just like, what the hell was that? She's doing old timey silent movie offense during commercial breaks. And you're like, okay.
It's bizarre. Then like the usage of like the black and white stuff for Tony Storm is really gratuitous and obnoxious and annoying and distracting. Rio, for me, just, I mean, I am aware that she is a very capable wrestler. I watched her throw that drop kick and I was not remotely interested in seeing her have a match with Tony Storm.
Right.
I like look at her, I'm like, she's so undersized, and I
get well soon, Jamie Hayter. That's all I can say. Let's rock this division back to its foundations, please. And I like women's wrestling a lot, so yeah. I have nothing else for the Lazy River. You?
Oh man, I'm trying to see if there's anything else on this show that was
apparently worth Punk had a pretty decent promo tonight. So
did he on SmackDown? Okay, yeah. Well, I mean that would be an improvement over the one prior.
Talk about that next week.
Yeah. Outside of that, it's Nia Jax.
We could have ended this show and you decided to talk about Nia Jax.
I mean, yeah, I'm gonna go. I'll go on Nia Jax. I mean,
okay, go ahead.
Like, we're doing this again. We're back.
Yes.
We're pushing her. We're pushing her a second time.
She has no noticeable improvement whatsoever.
I mean, like, the one thing you can say is that she's clearly lost like a considerable amount of weight, but in terms of actual skill or like any sort of like assets in the ring or whatever, no, she's just as useless as ever. I find her selling to be ridiculous.
Yes.
Like, she has like cartoon selling.
I
know, like, we have like the My Hole is like the classic meme, but like, dude, there's a super cut of Nia Jax bad sellings to be made. I would definitely watch a 15-minute supercut of.
In the old days, they would have told somebody potato her and then take her in the back and go, you remember how it felt when you really got punched? That's how you should be selling it right now, but maybe a little bit bigger.
Show her the video of like what her facials and everything look like. Yeah, and be like, that's what selling looks like. I know she flails like a character that you're fighting in Punch-Out.
She does a windmill every time because it's like, oh, you've thrown me off my equilibrium and I'm almost ready to fall here.
Yeah, yeah. Like,
she's a tree. She has the offense of a tree.
Yeah. No, I mean, it is very reminiscent of the matches in Punch-Out where you like have to knock the guy left and right and then they eventually topple over and that's like the structure of the fight.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's what Nia Jax basically is. I find it unrewarding. I don't understand why we're pushing her. It's a real shame. It's a real shame that both Shayna Baszler and
Zoe Stark
have been sacrificed to this project.
So that we can get back to Becky Lynch. So that we can bring back up the Survivor Series from 3 years ago or whatever. The build to that when she got punched in the nose and became the man. We've moved on, guys. She's had a child since then.
I mean, this circles back to, and this might actually serve as a nice wraparound here for the show. I mean, we started off talking about like Twitter and story angles and stuff like that. And I just think we are 3 weeks away from the year 2024, which is going to put us firmly in the middle of the 20s. We are in a new wrestling decade here and life has moved on. 2016 was 8 years ago now. Time is moving. It's slippery and that's okay. But we have to also be aware and cognizant that like, no, it's not what it was. And that's, and so no one cares about Becky Lynch, how she became the man now. I mean, so much has happened since then. That Becky Lynch becoming the man was like 2 years before COVID, right?
Yeah, she became the biggest star in WWE. That's what getting hit in the face was for. And if you're going to tell me that this is about revenge on Becky's part, that's preposterous. If Nia's mad about it, sure, then we can get into something possibly. Yeah, I was fired because I wouldn't take a vaccine.
right, yeah. That'd be interesting. That'd actually be much funnier. It's like, yeah, no, they let you back because of the nose thing. They fired you because of the vaccine.
The vaccine thing, yeah. Let that one simmer in front of a live crowd for a second, see how they react.
Yeah.
But for those who go by the Shake Them Ropes timetable, next week's show will be a little later than normal. I am going to Cincinnati next week to hang with my friend Sean Ross Sapp and go see a Cincinnati Bengals game. Be getting back sometime Sunday. So sometime Sunday or Monday of next week, maybe, whatever. Maybe we'll just hold off a show till midweek and do a long one for the end of the year and take the rest of the year off. Who knows? Chris and I have been talking. Chris might pick a pay-per-view for me to watch during my plane ride or something. So we'll see. We'll get some audio out there for you. As we've discussed, Chris and I, not taking a lot of notes over the year. So we can't do a best of. You know, what were your top 10 matches of the year, Chris? You know, I have two matches that I remember from this year that
it's been a tough year. Slapjack hasn't had a single match.
And I'd pick like the Gunther three-way at WrestleMania night one and just piss everybody off. So it was Will Ospreay. Okay, great. I liked the big guys beating each other up. How do you like that? You can follow me at CrapGame13 on X/Twitter, the dying platform of which Chris spoke. You can also just follow the show, Shake Them Ropes, all one word on that platform. We are part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Listen to the flagship, The Good, the Bad, the Hungry, which had special guest Uncle Dave on this week. Music of the Mat, Five Star Match Game, Days of Thunder, lots of other podcasts for your wrestling needs. I'm also on the Fight Game Media Network, now coming out from behind the paywall because Garrett's tired of trying to build a paywall. Chris and I have been there before. And those shows will be on the free feed starting in January. I do a show called The Dynamite Show. We record live about 20 minutes after Dynamite goes on, myself and Paul Fontaine. It's on YouTube. I plug it on the Twitter. If you're around, hey, come watch us live. We have some laughs. Chris is winding down for the holiday season, but winding up the music.
Yeah. Guys, the holidays are coming. All of them. And last week we talked about making Christmas a unifying time for all peoples.
Feliz Navidad.
Feliz Navidad.
Yes.
And this week I want to talk to all of you about bringing the gift of music to not one, but several members of your family. In the past, I've talked about getting guitar lessons for a member of your family who might be interested in music. What if there were several? I challenge you this week to search out your extended family and figure out who likes to play music, and then refer them to me for guitar lessons. If you are interested in guitar lessons, you can hit me up on Instagram at instagram.com/DOCTOR_NOV. That's Dr. Nove. You can send your third cousin, Billy, your second cousin once removed, Cleophas, your sister, Daisy. I am willing to teach any and all members of your family. So get as many as you can. Let's see who has the most members of their family who want to get guitar lessons. And that be really exciting.
You sound thrilled.
Hey, you know what? When your second cousin Cleophas, once removed, is, you know, playing the bass like a bad mofo in your local hardcore punk band.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit of slapping, a little bit of hardcore punk in the Kentucky scene where mm-hmm. Cleophas lives. Then you'll be thanking me, your buddy, Chris.
Also DM Chris if you'd like to go out for eggnog.
That's true.
Hello, Voices of Wrestling listener. Dave Ryan here. Have you ever wondered to yourself, how many hidden gems are hidden away inside the last years of World Championship Wrestling? Have you ever asked yourself how many tenuous gags can be made about the name Mike Enos? And have you ever thought about what it sounds like for two Irishmen to interpret a very chaotic company through its B-show? The answers to all this and more are just a click away. Check out Days of Thunder every second Thursday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.